tuned in to the Community Cats Podcast. Ready? Let's go.
Welcome to the Community Cats Podcast. I'm your host, Stacey LeBaron. I've been involved helping homeless cats for over 30 years with the Merrimack River Feline Rescue Society. The goal of this podcast is to expose you to amazing people who are improving the lives of cats. I hope these interviews will help you learn how you can turn your passion for cats into action. And today we're speaking with Dr. Bob Whedon. Dr. Whedon is currently the medical director and a high-quality, high-volume spay-neuter surgeon with Animal Rescue Coalition in Sarasota, Florida. After retiring as a clinical assistant professor and service head of shelter medicine at the University of Illinois College of Veterinary Medicine, where he trained veterinary students in high-quality, high-volume spay-neuter techniques, Dr. Whedon also instructs veterinarians in high-quality, high-volume spay-neuter techniques through his consulting company, SNP. Spay-neuter instructional program. As an advocate for solving the problem of pet overpopulation, particularly that of community cats, Dr. Whedon serves on the board of directors of the Alliance for Contraception in Cats and Dogs, an international organization whose goal is to develop and implement non-surgical sterilants to help solve the problem of animal overpopulation worldwide. Since December 2022, Dr. Whedon has been a member of the Vet Shortage Task Force convened by the United Spay Alliance and is a volunteer scientific advisor for Alley Cat Allies, a global advocate for the humane treatment of all cats. Dr. Whedon attended Purdue University, where he received his Bachelor of Science in Animal Science and his Doctor of Veterinary Medicine degrees. He received his Master of Public Health from the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and he's co-author of the chapter on rabies in the textbook Infectious Disease Management in Animal Shelters, second edition, as well as co-author of two chapters in the recently published textbook, High Quality, High Volume Spay and Neuter and Other Shelter Surgeries. Dr. Whedon, I'd like to welcome you to the show.
Well, thank you, Stacey. It's a pleasure to be here. My two passions are animal population control, particularly with regards to community cats, and also rabies prevention. So it's a perfect opportunity to talk about both.
I am so excited for this conversation. I always love chatting with you. You've been a frequent guest on the podcast, and we will in the show notes, we'll have links to past episodes. So if folks want to find out more about sort of Dr. Whedon's earlier days, feel free to tune into those shows. But today we are talking about public health, trap, neuter, return, how they relate, how they work together. Why is it so important? So we're going to kick right off here. We're going to jump right into the deep end here on the questions. And, you know, why are trap neuter return programs and spay neuter programs for owned cats so important to public health? How would you introduce a TNR program to town officials? And, you know, is there an outline of information to share? I don't hear about public health and TNR that much together.
Well, first of all, Stacey, there's a small but vocal group that uses fear-mongering to oppose TNR programs. And officials who lead municipalities often read this tripe, and as a result, because of that fear-mongering, they can be hostile with respect to establishing TNR programs in their communities. And probably the most notable attack on TNR is the book Cat Wars, The Devastating Consequences of a Cuddly Killer, written by Peter Mara and published in 2016. According to Mara, who's been with the Smithsonian Institution's Conservation Biology Institute since 1999 and now runs its Migratory Bird Center, outdoor cats are, quote, unrelenting killers and cauldrons of disease, unquote, whose, quote, devastating consequences, unquote, must be dealt with by eradication in the name of biodiversity. Quote, from a conservation ecology perspective, the most desirable solution seems clear. Removing all free-ranging cats from the landscape by any means necessary. First of all, since when did killing one species in the name of another ever make any sense? Recently, opponents of TNR programs have focused on two public health issues, rabies and toxoplasmosis, in their efforts to scare people regarding the apparent threats to these diseases posed by feral and free-roaming cats. We're going to discuss these two diseases today and demonstrate why TNR programs actually protect people in their communities from these threats. So to answer your question about introducing TNR to town or county officials, Stacy, from my perspective, TNR programs have traditionally been about the welfare of the cats. I prefer the term TNVR, trap, neuter, vaccinate, return, to emphasize the fact that we are vaccinating these cats for rabies. In doing so, we are creating a barrier to the disease between wildlife and domestic pets and people. As a result, we engage a whole new set of stakeholders, the public health community. Suddenly, it isn't just about the well-being of the cats, but now the well-being of the community comes into play by creating this barrier to rabies between wildlife and pets and people. Once the public health community realizes that this is indeed beneficial to the community at large, they would, or should anyway, embrace TNVR for its benefits to the cats and to the community.
So when you have approached public health officials, you go with the angle that there is a buffer created in between the TNVR cats. So when we're talking with our public health officials, we need to say TNVR, not TNR. And so that's one important factor that we need to make sure we have in that conversation. And we also have to say that these cats, because they are vaccinated, they are actually protecting the community. Would you agree with those two statements?
Got a great visual that I use. And I don't know, maybe it's a good time for a spoiler alert about the possibility of doing a webinar for United Spay Alliance early next year. But I've got a really great PowerPoint presentation that's got a wonderful graphic that shows with just 50% herd immunity, just vaccinating 50% of the cats in a colony, that as if a rabid animal were to come in contact with that colony, because half the cats are protected, then a very small percentage are actually going to be exposed and come down with rabies. One of the problems we see is in communities that are practicing TNVR, then animal control comes in and traps and removes vaccinated cats. Their place is taken by an unvaccinated cat. You can see how rabies then can explode potentially in that colony. It's kind of hard to explain, but the graphic shows it well. So if it's not a spoiler alert, then maybe, you know, the listeners can watch the webinar come early next year.
Yeah, and we'll make sure in our show notes, we certainly have a link to that webinar so people can visually see what you're trying to explain here and be able to take it to that next level of education. Obviously, we only have 25 minutes with you today, and in the webinar, you'll be able to expand to a whole nother level. You know, back in 2014, I was thrilled to get a phone call from the head of Department of Public Health. They reached out and they begged, honestly begged, what do I need to do in order to get your mobile spay neuter clinic to come into our town? Would you perceive that to be a progressive public health official?
Well, Stacy, I wouldn't just say yes, but rather heck yes, especially since that was a decade ago. I mean, clearly this person recognized the value of sterilization, but also vaccinating community cats for rabies and thereby creating a barrier to the disease between wildlife and pets and people. I would conjecture that they looked at the evidence and determined, rightly so, that sterilization and vaccination of community cats was A, in the cat's best interest, and B, in the community's best interest. We know that killing cats doesn't work. Heck, we've been doing that for decades. How's that been working out? It's not. And doing nothing, well, that does nothing to solve the problem. So yes, I would have to say that this person was progressive. We need to clone him or her and get them in more communities around the country.
It's a wonderful relationship. It's actually Fitchburg, Massachusetts is the town. And the fire department was also a very active lobbyist in bringing us to town. And they let us use one of their bays for their fire trucks for our community cat spay neuter events for the cats to recover. So we had our spay neuter clinic outside and the cats were in the bay. It was all heated up and the cats were lined up and able to do their recovery right there. So not only did we serve owned cats, but we also served community cats with trap, neuter, vaccinate, and return services there.
You know, that just demonstrates the value of a public-private partnership. We had a similar situation when I was in Illinois, that where we took our mobile unit to a small community, and we worked with the community. We charged owners $50 to sterilize a female cat, and of that $50, $25 of it went to sterilize a feral cat. So the owners were actually subsidizing the feral cat sterilization. And the county, I forget how many cats we did that day. We did a bunch. The net cost to the town was zero. And the owned animals got sterilized, but some feral cats got sterilized as well. So those kind of creative public-private partnerships are wonderful. And you need a place to stage and recover the animals. And what better way than working with the fire department, for instance?
So in some towns, the animal control officer is part of the police, not public health. Do you have an opinion on where animal control officers should be located in services?
Well, when I was the veterinarian on the New Hanover County, North Carolina Board of Health from 2005 through 2010, animal control was part of the New Hanover County Health Department. Their focus was on rabies awareness and prevention, since we had active raccoon rabies in the county. As a veterinarian with a Master of Public Health degree, I saw the value to this approach. Shortly after I left to take the faculty position at Illinois, the county reorganized animal control and placed it under the sheriff's department. I'm told they did this so that the animal control officers could have arrest powers and carry firearms. From my perspective, animal control belongs in the health department, but I can see arguments that ACOs should serve a law enforcement function as well.
So it sounds like you're coming on the record saying, depends.
Well, I would lobby, if you take the view from 35,000 feet, I would lobby that animal control is a function of the health department, because in many cases, now some states that don't have a rabies problem, then rabies awareness and prevention is not that important. But in most states along the eastern seaboard, and certainly where I am in Florida, we do have rabies virus. And so awareness and prevention is important, and that's the function of animal control. And I believe that the animal control belongs under the auspices of the health department. That said, I do see the value in them having arrest capability and the ability. You know, animal control officers have been attacked by people when they're investigating cruelty claims or whatnot. So the ability to be able to defend themselves, sadly, in our society, is important, I think.
I'm going to switch to some of the more focused questions with regards to the cats themselves. I get questions all of the time from folks that are out there doing trap, neuter, vaccinate, and return. How often do I need to retrap these community cats in order to get their vaccines boosted? You know, we hear annually, how am I going to do that when I need to go out and trap so many other cats that need access to spay neuter services? Is this the best use of our time and resources, as, you know, they're just kittens everywhere else being born?
Well, Stacey, this is an important question because it's often used by critics of TNVR programs, because the label of a 3-year rabies vaccine states, quote, aseptically inject 1 ml subcutaneously or intramuscularly into healthy dogs and cats, revaccinate cats and dogs 1 year after first vaccination, then every 3 years with a single dose, unquote. Most state laws have similar language. Since there are legal requirements regarding rabies vaccine, veterinarians do not have leeway to deviate from the label directions, as they can and often do with other vaccines. So technically, if the cat is not boosted within a year, then they are no longer considered currently vaccinated. However, We know that immunity doesn't magically go away after a year. There was a peer-reviewed paper published in the Journal of the American Veterinary Medical Association in 2007 by Fisher et al. That concluded, quote, vaccination of feral cats at the time of neutering may protect them for much of their remaining lifespan because immunity that develops following vaccination has been shown to persist for a minimum of 3 to 7 years in most cats. Ideally, feral cats should be recaptured and receive booster vaccination, particularly with a vaccine against rabies, according to the guidelines established by the American Association of Feline Practitioners, unquote. But I would argue that one rabies vaccine in a cat's life is better than none. And you know, the old adage that perfection is the worst enemy of good. I personally have always used a 3-year licensed rabies vaccine in my TNVR programs because I know that that vaccine is licensed for 3 years. The manufacturer has proven through virulent virus challenge that the vaccine remains protective for a 3-year duration and maybe even longer, because there's evidence that protection lasts much longer than 3 years. But because rabies is a uniformly fatal disease, veterinarians are not at liberty to deviate from the vaccine label, for instance, saying your cat only needs a rabies vaccine every 5 years or every 7 years, as they do with, you know, some of the other vaccines. However, I would argue that in a community cat situation, one rabies vaccine is better than none. Sure, there are progressive colony caretakers that will attempt to retrap and revaccinate cats after a year, and I applaud them. However, doing so takes resources and time. Certainly that is a best case scenario, but as I've already said, I would argue that one rabies vaccine is better than none. There is scientific evidence that immunity lasts longer than 3 years. In the latest iteration of the Compendium of Animal Rabies Prevention and Control, 2016, there was a significant change in the language regarding animals with expired rabies vaccines. It states, quote, following the initial vaccination, booster vaccination should be given in a manner consistent with the manufacturer's label. If a previously vaccinated animal is overdue for any booster vaccination, including the first booster vaccination due 1 year after initial vaccination, there's a lot of vaccinations in this passage, it should be given a booster vaccination. Immediately after this booster vaccination, the animal is considered currently vaccinated and should be placed on a booster vaccination schedule consistent with the label of the vaccine used. Now, unquote. This change in the wording is significant for two reasons. First, if a previously vaccinated animal is exposed to a rabid or presumably rabid animal, under the old guidelines, he was considered non-vaccinated and would have to be quarantined for 6 months. With the latest iteration of the compendium, they simply need a booster vaccination, indicated a rapid anamnestic response. Second, and more importantly, this indicates a good anamnestic response, and anamnestic means booster response, to the previously administered vaccine, where it says, immediately after this booster vaccination, the animal is considered currently vaccinated. So if a cat is retrapped, say, 3 years later and booster, he or she should develop protective immunity very quickly. It is important to note that the compendium also states, quote, within 28 days after initial vaccination, a peak rabies virus antibody titer is expected, and the animal can be considered immunized, unquote. Why is this important? Because an animal is not considered currently vaccinated until 28 days after its initial vaccination. We cannot count on it being protected should it be exposed to a rabid animal. It may take that long for the initial protective immunity to develop. That's not the case with a booster vaccination, even one that happened years after the initial vaccine expired.
Wow. That's a lot of information about rabies vaccinations and everything. But from somebody who actually, I've been vaccinated for rabies, right? And I'm sure you've had your pre-exposure to rabies vaccines too. So as we get our titer checked, you know, over time to make sure that we've had it. And there are some veterinarians who, some folks in the animal welfare space, they get one round of pre-exposure rabies vaccines and they're good for life, basically. And then other people have to have boosters periodically. So not only is there a rabies vaccine out there for the cats, but also for those of us in the business, too, we have been vaccinated.
Keep in mind, it's much more economically feasible to vaccinate a cat than it is a person. In a former life, before I went to academia, I was in a private practice setting, and we, long story short, had taken in a dog from animal control that they thought had been hit by a car. Turns out he'd been in a fight with a raccoon and had a broken leg as a result of it. And he came down with signs consistent with rabies. And I remember asking the veterinarian who was taking care of him, who at the time was my wife, probably why she's my ex-wife now, have you considered rabies? And she said, she looked at me like I had two heads and said, there hadn't been a case of rabies in a dog in New Hanover County in 50 years. Long story short, we ended up euthanizing the dog, tested him. He was positive. 50 people were deemed to have been exposed. Now, this dog didn't bite anyone. He was a puppy. But what do puppies do? They lick you. And there are three criteria for rabies exposure: a bite that breaks the skin, salivary contact of a fresh open wound, or salivary contact of mucous membranes. Puppies kiss you and lick you. 50 people were deemed to have been exposed. The cost for post-exposure prophylaxis for those 50 people was over $400,000. Yeah. So, yes, they do have vaccines for people. I've been vaccinated. I've had my titer checked. I've been in contact with two rabid animals in my career. One bit me. I had post-exposure prophylaxis after that. And then this little Johnny dog, the puppy, it had been a long time since I'd been titered until he made me go through the post-exposure again. But my titer is very high ever since. And it's much easier and much more economically feasible to protect yourself. And that's what we're doing with these cats. We're vaccinating them. And it, you know, rabies vaccine costs wholesale $2 or $3 a dose. So organizations that claim we don't have resources to do that, $3, including a syringe, come on. Look at the impact you're going to make in your community by vaccinating these cats and creating that barrier to the disease between wild animals. So,
embrace your cat addiction with Whisker Tracker. Download the free mobile app that lets you track your cat sightings and helps you manage your cat colonies. You can create cat profiles, see your cats on a map, and track the health and status of all your cats. Whisker Tracker is available to download now, with new features being added monthly. Cat facial recognition will allow you to identify cats and help find missing pets. You can track your walks and how many cats you spotted, complete fun cat finding challenges, and climb to the top of the kitty leaderboard. The cats' locations are private for their safety, but you can connect with other caretakers through the cat's profile. When you sign up for a premium subscription using a Rescue's referral code, the Rescue will get a portion of the monthly revenue. Help support your favorite Rescue by taking pictures of cats. With badges, leaderboards, and a community of cat lovers, Whisker Tracker is more than just an app. It's a movement. Get it? It's a movement. Join the cat spotting community and download the Whisker Tracker mobile app today. Want an easy grant opportunity for your animal organization? Maddie's Fund is giving away a $3,000 grant each month to one lucky Maddie's Pet Forum member. You'll automatically be entered to win each month when you start a new discussion, reply to a new post, or upload a new library resource. Learn more at forum.maddiesfund.org today.
Wouldn't it be fantastic if your whole TNR team was on the same page? Imagine your staff and volunteers mastering trapping best practices, prepping cats properly for clinic arrival, and making everyone's job easier. Would you like to give them a toolbox of tips and tricks to refer to whenever trapping gets tough? Our monthly virtual TNR workshops are perfect for group training, covering everything from TNR philosophy to planning, equipment use, public relations, because we are all going to run into those stubborn neighbors, and cat care tips, plus more. With Q&A sessions, handouts, customized content for your program, your team will be ready to successfully reduce the number of free-roaming cats in your community. Ready to turn your trappers into a team? Great! Email Stacy at communitycatspodcast.com or call 978-239-2090 for details.
I'm going to turn the tide just a bit in our conversation today. Let's talk about toxoplasmosis. We hear about it a lot. Many of our listeners may not even know what it is. And so if you could just share a few thoughts about that, because we do hear about this quite a bit in the world of why community cats shouldn't be outdoors out there.
Oh, my God. This is one of those things that Mara fearmongers about. And, you know, he says in Cat Wars, quote, "It is becoming increasingly clear toxoplasmosis is a significant zoonotic disease, perhaps one of the most significant that impacts humans globally. And it emerges primarily from outdoor domestic cats," unquote. Talk about a statement that's going to create fear in a community. Well, let's look at a little more closely at the organism and its life cycle. The life cycle is very complex. But while the cat is the definitive host, the organism is shed in their feces for only a short time, 1 to 3 weeks duration, once in that cat's lifetime. And let me restate that cats that are exposed, and most of them are infected at a young age when they start to hunt and consume an infected rodent, they will only shed the organism one time for a period of 1 to 3 weeks in their feces, and then never again. Mayer would have you believe the cats are out there shedding toxoplasmosis organisms constantly, and as a result, pose a threat to people and pets. And, you know, they talk about a woman who gets pregnant and an OB who hasn't kept up tells her to get rid of her cat. If there are oocysts in that cat's feces, they don't become infective for about a week. They have to sit in the soil before they become infective. There's so much misinformation about this disease. And like I said, Mara would have you believe the cats are out there shedding it constantly. And as a result, pose a threat to people and pets. This is why he's been quoted as saying that we need to, quote, remove all free-ranging cats from the landscape by any means necessary, unquote. That's not going to work, nor will it solve the problem of toxoplasmosis, nor is it humane. First of all, there's no way we're ever going to remove all free-ranging cats. Second of all, most cats become infected from carnivorous behavior soon after weaning and shed oocysts for only short periods, under 3 weeks, thereafter. Preventing kittens from being born will decrease the amount of T. gondii organisms in the environment. That's how we reduce the spread of toxoplasmosis. While Mara would have you believe that community cats are a threat to public health, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, quote, ingestion of undercooked meat or contamination of uncooked foods by cutting boards used to prepare raw meat is the most common source of toxoplasma infection for humans, unquote. Furthermore, and I think this is really funny, the textbook entitled Handbook of Zoonoses, Identification and Prevention by Colville and Berryhill states, quotes, cats have gotten a bad rap about how they transmit toxoplasmosis to humans and how they cause spontaneous abortion in women and blindness and mental retardation in newborn and older children. While it is true that cats are the only definitive host for the infective stage of the toxoplasma organism, they are not the most common source of human infection. The most efficient way to get toxoplasmosis from a cat is to eat the cat undercooked, unquote. This was in a textbook, and I know it's somewhat tongue-in-cheek, but it is it's ridiculous how much fear-mongering is used about toxoplasmosis.
Well, thank you for sharing your thoughts on that topic as somebody who has been pregnant in the past and has heard people say, you work around cats? What do you, you know, why are you doing this? And so it is refreshing to hear a grounded perspective with regards to that, because we do hear and read quite a bit about that. And I mean, at the end of the day, for folks that do follow our community cat pyramid, so many of the cats that are outdoors are cats that have owners of some kind. They have a community, they have relationship. And so the best thing we can do for those cats is get them their public health, which is vaccination, spay neuter support, be able to bring them indoors, support them, support the community supporting those cats. That's what we can do to help. And inevitably, that is going to reduce, potentially reduce, the outdoor population of cats, as well as the suffering of the kittens out there. I mean, those kittens that are living outside that have a challenged first year of life. This public health for pets, which is the tagline that we hear so much from the United Spay Alliance, you know, it's spay neuter, it's public health for pets. That's what we need to be providing for the cats in our community. You agree, Dr. Whedon?
100%. And again, if you go back to one of my original statements, a lot of people think of TNR programs as to benefit the cats. But when you throw that V in there, TNVR programs not only benefit the cats, but they also benefit the community.
Exactly.
So, you know, that's the goal. We want to help the cats, but we also want to protect the community.
So, Dr. Whedon, if folks want to find out more about some of the work that you've been up to, how would they do that?
They're welcome to contact me. I'm on the board of directors of the Alliance for Contraception in Cats and Dogs. And I think as long as you've known me, you know that animal population control, particularly with respect to community cats, has always been my passion. Close second is rabies prevention and protecting cats from the threat of rabies. And the interesting thing is that the rabies prevention just requires a vaccination, but sterilization requires anesthesia and surgery. Now, imagine for a moment what we could accomplish with a non-surgical sterile. You could trap a community cat, just give him or her a shot, and voila, they would be sterilized. And the Alliance for Contraception in Cats and Dogs is working to facilitate such a product, and they're currently is promising research that could come to market within 3 to 5 years. However, there are unintended consequences of such a product. How do we identify a sterilized community cat? Yep, we tip their ear. But if that cat no longer needs to be anesthetized for surgery, then we certainly can't cut off the tip of their ear. ACC&D is working on a way to identify these cats using a microneedle patch technology that will deliver a tattoo to the inside of a treated cat's ear. Now, you might say, well, how are you going to tattoo the inside of a cat's ear if it's feral? Well, we've thought about that. And cats that are truly feral will probably require some form of sedation for their injections, but not necessarily general anesthesia. And that level of sedation will allow us to tattoo their ear. And then once completed, that sedation could be reversed and the cat could be immediately released. One high-quality, high-volume spay-neuter surgeon can sterilize 30 to 40 cats in a day, depending on gender. Imagine how many we could do if we just had to give them an injection. Stay tuned, folks. It's coming.
Wonderful. Excellent. Excellent. Anything else you want to share with our listeners before we sign off?
You know, you've got my email address, Stacy. Yep. If anybody contacts you wanting more information or wants to get a hold of me, feel free to share it with them. I'm happy to share it and answer any questions that may arise from this.
Folks can reach out to us here at the podcast and we can get in touch with you directly. And you referenced quite a few resources in this conversation today. So we'll try to make sure we get those in the show notes for folks that want to find out more. And we are going to have a webinar with the United Spay Alliance with Dr. Whedon in 2025. So keep your eyes and ears out and posted for that. And we'll certainly also have that link in the show notes too as we release this show. So Dr. Whedon, I want to thank you again so much for being a guest on the show and for all that you do for community cats. Really appreciate it. And I really hope we'll have you on the show in the future.
I'd love talking to you about this and sharing this information with your audience. I don't want to wear out my welcome, Stacy, but like I said, anytime I can help, you know, I'm happy to do so. I really do appreciate it.
Super. Thank you so much, Dr. Whedon.
You're quite welcome.
That's it for this week. Please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave a review. We love to hear what you think, and a 5-star review really helps others find the show. You can also join the conversation with listeners, cat caretakers, and me on Facebook and Instagram. And don't forget to hit follow or subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, YouTube, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a single show. Thanks for listening, and thank you for everything that you do to help create a safe and healthy world for cats.